You're listening to the Restless Wanderer podcast by Paul Coulter, and this is part 12 of a series in 1st and 2nd Kings. 1st Kings, chapter 15. Now, in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, Abijam began to reign over Judah. He reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Maachah, the daughter of Abishalom. And he walked in all the sins that his father did before him. And his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father. Nevertheless, for David's sake, the Lord his God gave him a lamp in Jerusalem, setting up his son after him and establishing Jerusalem, because David did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and did not turn aside from anything that he had commanded him all the days of his life, except in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. Now there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. The rest of the acts of Abijam and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And there was war between Abijam and Jeroboam, and Abijam slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David, and Asa his son reigned in his place. Now we'll pause there after verse 8 of 1 Kings 15, but what we're seeing here is the pattern that will flow now for a number of chapters in Kings, of telling us about the accounts of kings of Judah and of Israel. And the beginning of the reign of Abijam is pegged against the regnal year of King Jeroboam. So the 18th year of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, Abijam becomes king in Judah. He is the son of Rehoboam. And he only reigns for 3 years. But notice he is from the tribe, or the house rather, the dynasty of David. And it's against David that he, as all of the subsequent kings of Judah are, is judged. We are told that he walked in the sins that his father did. So remember I said in the last episode that Rehoboam doesn't get judged or assessed against David, at least not explicitly in chapter 14. And Rehoboam is a complex figure because he himself seems to worship God at the temple, but he allows the nation to carry on in their idolatry. But here perhaps we're getting an indication that it's not as simple as that, that Rehoboam himself was engaged in idolatry or in other sins at least. But we're seeing here the faithfulness of God above all in this passage, that for David's sake, Yahweh, his God, the Lord, gave him a lamp in Jerusalem, established Jerusalem. In chapter 14, we saw that Shishak, the king of Egypt, was able to do as he would with Jerusalem. Jerusalem seems weak and vulnerable. But in the reign of Abijam, Jerusalem is established, whether it becomes stronger or it's simply that it doesn't get invaded again as it had in Rehoboam's reign. God preserves Jerusalem, and he does it for the sake of David. David, again, verse 5 tells us, is the one who did what is right in the eyes of the Lord, didn't turn aside, except in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. Of course, that disgusting and tragic set of events where David breaks almost every one of the Ten Commandments in one way or another, committing adultery with Bathsheba and then having Uriah murdered. And so it's not glossing over the sins of David, but it's establishing David as the standard of a godly king who follows the way of God. But there is conflict between Rehoboam and Jeroboam. It's not the all-out civil war that Rehoboam had initially tried to bring about when he gathered 180,000 men right at the beginning of the split, and may have been able to conquer the northern kingdom decisively before they could arrange their troops, but God told him not to. You might remember that back in chapter 12. But Abijam, we don't know a lot of detail about what he did, other than that he is judged as deficient, as sinful. He is a negative king of Judah. Other details are in this other book, the book of the Chronicles, but we do know that there was war between Abijam and Jeroboam. Let's read on then verse 9 of 1 Kings 15. In the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa began to reign over Judah, and he reigned for 41 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Maachah, the daughter of Abishalom. And Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as David, his father, had done. He put away the male cult prostitutes out of the land and removed all the idols that his fathers had made. He also removed Maacah, his mother, from being queen mother because she had made an abominable image for Asherah. And Asa cut down her image and burned it in the brook Kidron, or at the brook Kidron. But the high places were not taken away. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly true to the Lord all his days, and he brought into the house of the Lord the sacred gifts of his father and his own sacred gifts, silver and gold and vessels. And there was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days. Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah, that he might permit no one to go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. Then Asa took all the silver and the gold that were left in the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house and gave them into the hands of his servant and King Asa or his servants. And King Asa sent them to Ben-Hadad, the son of Tabrimon, the son of Hezion, king of Syria, who lived in Damascus, saying, "Let there be a covenant between me and you, as there was between my father and your father. Behold, I am sending to you a present of silver and gold. Go, break your covenant with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me." And Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and sent the commanders of his armies against the cities of Israel and conquered Ijon, Dan, Abel-Beth-Maacah, and all Chinneroth with all the land of Naphtali. And when Baasha heard of it, he stopped building Ramah and he lived in Tirzah. Then King Asa made a proclamation to all Judah. None was exempt, and they carried away the stones of Ramah and its timber with which Baasha had been building. And with them King Asa built Geba of Benjamin and Mizpah. Now the rest of all the acts of Asa, all his might and all that he did, and the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? But in his old age he was diseased in his feet. And Asa slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David his father. And Jehoshaphat his son reigned in his place. Now again, we're seeing this pattern. A second king of Judah, well, not the second king, the third king of that southern kingdom, Rehoboam being the first. But we've had Abijah, who was an evil king, and now we have Asa, who is a good king. And we'll see this pattern that there are many evil kings of the southern kingdom, but there are some good ones. In the northern kingdom, on the other hand, there are no good kings, no kings who follow David's example, no kings who are pleasing to God. They're all idolatrous and leading God's people in the northern kingdom away from him. But we see that Asa brings about reform in a way that Rehoboam, his grandfather, had not done. He reigns for a long time. That's a good thing because his reign is a godly reign. And so decisive is his reform that he even puts away his mother, Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom. Now again, there's perhaps something that's confusing here, that Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom, is also called in verse 2, the mother of Abijam, who is described as the father of Asa in verse 8. Now, there are a few options of what this might mean. The most plain reading of it might be that Abijam slept with his own mother and had a son, Asa, from her. That's possible. Certainly, we know that Abijam was an evil king, and it's possible that he did something sinful like that. But I think that's probably less likely than the alternative possibility. And I think the strongest alternative is that Maacah was actually the grandmother of Asa rather than his mother. There is no distinct word, I understand, in biblical Hebrew for grandmother. And it's quite common, in fact, to read about kings who are likened to their father, even their father David, although he might have been an ancestor several generations back. That's there in verse 3. It says that Abijam was not wholly true as the heart of David his father was, but David wasn't his father, he was his ancestor. So in other words, Maacah, I think most likely, is the grandmother of Asa, the wife of Rehoboam, the mother of Asa's father, Abijam. But she's clearly an influential woman because she's given this title. She's described as the queen mother, effectively. Verse 13, he removed Maaka from being queen mother. That's an honorific title that's only used really of other women like Jezebel in the old in the Book of Kings. It might have been a title that was used of all the mothers of kings, but we don't actually know. What we do know is that it's used here. It's used of Jezebel, and it's used to describe the mother of Jehoiachin, and also Pharaoh's consort. But clearly Maaka had influence, and Asa takes action against her, and that was difficult within the family. It's decisive. It's what Rehoboam failed to do, of course, what Abijam wasn't interested in doing, but Asa does it. Now, it's not a total reform. He doesn't take away, or at least he doesn't manage to get the high places taken away, but his heart is true to God, and he begins to restore the fortunes of the temple, bringing in wealth accumulated by his father and by himself. But he is at war with Baasha, who's king of Israel. Now, we haven't got to Baasha yet in the story of Israel. We've been left with Jeroboam, who was still king when Asa came to the throne. But we'll come across Baasha later on. And in fighting against Baasha, you'll see that Asa turns to the kings of Syria. Again, this tragic situation where fighting amongst God's people means that they turn to powers outside, and that strengthens the hand of Syria, because Syria here conquers parts of the northern kingdom. Gradually, the northern kingdom's territory will be chipped away through this kind of process. They conquer all Chinnereth, that means the region of Galilee and the lands of the tribes of Naphtali and other cities in the north of the northern kingdom. But this turns the fortunes of the two kingdoms, and whereas Baasha had seemed to have the upper hand and was building up the city of Ramah to prevent people going down to Jerusalem, to Judah, Asa uses the wealth of his own house and the house of the Lord, the temple, and with it bribes effectively the king of Syria to come over onto his side. And then Asa is able to plunder the city of Ramah that had been being built, and instead to build up his own fortified cities to protect Judah against the northern kingdom. So he builds up Geba of Benjamin and Mizpah. So here is Asa, a good king. Let's read on 1 Kings chapter 15, verse 25. Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah. And he reigned over Israel for 2 years. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the way of his father, and in his sin which he made Israel to sin. Baasha, the son of Ahijah, of the house of Issachar, conspired against him, and Baasha struck him down at Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines, for Nadab and all Israel were laying siege to Gibbethon. So Baasha killed him in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his place. And as soon as he was king, he killed all the house of Jeroboam. He left to the house of Jeroboam not one that breathed, until he had destroyed it, according to the word of the Lord that he spoke by his servant Ahijah the Shilonite. It was for the sins of Jeroboam that he sinned, and that he made Israel to sin, and because of the anger to which he provoked the Lord, the God of Israel. Now the rest of the acts of Nadab and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And there was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days. We'll pause there at verse 32. Now, as we've already seen, looking at the reign of Asa, Asa becomes king while Jeroboam is still on the throne, but 2 years later, Jeroboam dies and Nadab, his son, becomes king. But remember, God has delivered in chapter 14 the prophecy through Ahijah against Jeroboam, and has said that his whole household will be killed, all of the men in it. Only his son Abijam, who dies prematurely, would have a burial fit for the son of a king. And this prophecy is now fulfilled. It's fulfilled through a man from the tribe of Issachar. And we'll see this pattern that there are repeated changes of dynasties in the Northern Kingdom. So after Jeroboam, just one more king in his line, Nadab, who only reigns for 2 years. He's an evil king, verse 26, as all of the northern kings are. He continues in the path that his father has set. But God brings his judgment through this man, Baasha, from the house of Issachar. And again, it's tragic because here is the king, Nadab, laying siege to a Philistine city. That seems like a good thing. The Philistines have been the long-term enemies of God's people. And even in that moment, Baasha takes opportunity to strike him from behind. It's an awful thing. And he annihilates the house of Jeroboam, fulfilling that prophecy. It's a movement of God's judgment, but through an evil man, Baasha. Let's read on then about the reign of Baasha, 1 Kings 15, verse 33. In the third year of Asa, king of Judah, Baasha, the son of Ahijah, began to reign over all Israel at Tirzah, and he reigned for 24 years. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin, which he made Israel to sin. Chapter 16. And the word of the Lord came to Jehu, son of Hanani, against Baasha, saying, Since I exalted you out of the dust and made you leader over my people Israel, and you have walked in the way of Jeroboam and have made my people Israel to sin, provoking me to anger with their sins, behold, I will utterly sweep away Baasha and his house, and I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. Anyone belonging to Baasha who dies in the city, the dogs shall eat, and any one of his who dies in the field, the birds of the heavens shall eat. Now the rest of the acts of Baasha and what he did and his might, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? And Baasha slept with his fathers and was buried at Tirzah, and Elah his son reigned in his place. Moreover, the word of the Lord came by the prophet Jehu, the son of Hanani, against Baasha and his house, both because of all the evil that he did in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger with the works of his hands, in being like the house of Jeroboam, and also because he destroyed it. Pausing there at verse 7. So here we have the word of the Lord coming again through Jehu, the prophet. Declaration of judgment. Just as Ahijah had brought a declaration of judgment on Jeroboam and Baasha is the one who fulfills it, so now Baasha will suffer the same judgment, both because he continues in Jeroboam's evil pattern, but also because he destroyed the house of Jeroboam. And this helps resolve a little bit. How can God use someone evil like Baasha to bring judgment on Jeroboam's family? Well, God will do ultimate justice. Baasha himself will face the same standard of righteous judgment that he had been the agent of against Jeroboam's household. Let's read on 1 Kings 16, verse 8. In the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah, Elah, the son of Baasha, began to reign over Israel in Tirzah, and he reigned for 2 years. But his servant Zimri, commander of half his chariots, conspired against him. When he was at Tirzah, drinking himself drunk in the house of Arza, who was over the household in Tirzah, Zimri came in and struck him down and killed him, in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his place. When he began to reign, as soon as he had seated himself on his throne, he struck down all the house of Baasha. He did not leave him a single male of his relatives or his friends. Thus Zimri destroyed all the house of Baasha, according to the word of the Lord which he spoke against Baasha by Jehu the prophet, for all the sins of Baasha and the sins of Elah his son, that they sinned, and that they made Israel to sin, provoking the Lord God of Israel to anger with their idols. Now the rest of the acts of Elah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? Pausing there at verse 14. So you'll notice the pattern repeating itself. You had Jeroboam and then his son Nadab reigning for 2 years. And then you have Baasha disposing of Nadab and his son Elah reigning for 2 years until Zimri comes and strikes him down and annihilates his household. Exactly the same pattern. Tragic, sad kings who generation or king after king reject God, do evil in the sight of God. Other kings who are used as agents of judgment, but then who themselves do evil. Although we're not told a lot about what Zimri did, other than how he annihilates the household of Elah. We're not told where he came from, what tribe he was from, but he becomes the next king. So we're already in the third dynasty, third family to reign in the northern kingdom. And of course, the family of David persists in the southern kingdom. 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 15. In the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, Zimri reigned for 7 days in Tirzah. Now the troops were encamped against Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines, and the troops who were encamped heard it, said, Zimri has conspired and he has killed the king. Therefore all Israel made Omri, the commander of the army, king over Israel that day in the camp. So Omri went up from Gibbethon and all Israel with him, and they besieged Tirzah. And when Zimri saw that the city was taken, he went into the citadel of the king's house and burned the king's house over him with fire and died because of his sins that he committed, doing evil in the sight of the Lord, walking in the way of Jeroboam, and for his sin that he committed, making Israel to sin. Now the rest of the acts of Zimri and the conspiracy that he made, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? Zimri doesn't last long. Verse 20 is the end of that reading. He reigns for only 7 days. In fact, the army of Israel, which is still besieging Gibbethon, remember they were besieging Gibbethon whenever Baasha rebelled against Nadab, and still a couple of years later, they're back besieging the same city of Gibbethon. History is repeating itself in that sense. We've had the longer reign of Baasha, and then the short reign of his son before Zimri killed him. And now Zimri is replaced by Omri, who is the commander of the army. Again, we're not told where Omri comes from at this point, or even what tribe he's from, but Omri becomes king. So 1 Kings 16, verse 21. Then the people of Israel were divided into two parts. Half of the people followed Tibni, the son of Ginath, to make him king, and half followed Omri. But the people who followed Omri overcame the people who followed Tibni, the son of Ginath. So Tibni died, and Omri became king. In the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, Omri began to reign over Israel, and he reigned for 12 years. For 6 years he reigned in Tirzah. He bought the hill of Samaria from Shemer for 2 talents of silver, and he fortified the hill and called the name of the city that he built Samaria, after the name of Shemer, the owner of the hill. Omri did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and did more evil than all who were before him, for he walked in all the ways of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and in the sins that he made Israel to sin, provoking the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger by their idols. Now the rest of the acts of Omri that he did, and the might that he showed, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? And Omri slept with his fathers and was buried in Samaria, and Ahab his son reigned in his place. We'll pause there again at verse 28 of 1 Kings 16. Here we have this rapid succession of kings, little details being told, whether they reigned for a relatively long time or a short time. Omri has a civil war on his hands. This northern kingdom is divided, it's fractious. You've got these changes of dynasty, and there's a rival Tibni, but the Omri's followers overcome Tibni's followers, and so Omri is able to confirm himself as king, and he reigns for 12 years, and his significant legacy was to build the city of Samaria, which becomes the kingdom, or the capital rather, of the northern kingdom. It had originally been Shechem, remember, then it moves to Tirzah, which even in the time of Jeroboam became the capital, but now it's going to move to Samaria. Omri, like all of the kings of Israel, does evil in God's sight and leads the people of Israel to do the same. And his son is Ahab, who becomes one of the most significant of the kings of Israel. I'm sure if you're familiar with the Bible, you'll have heard of him, because he's the king against whom Elijah speaks. And in the next chapter, chapter 17, we're going to see the beginning of the account of Elijah's ministry. So these couple of chapters have been a rapid succession, getting us in a sense from Jeroboam and Rehoboam down to the time of Elijah. But let's read the end of 1 Kings 16, the beginning of the reign of Ahab, verse 29. In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, Ahab the son of Omri began to reign over Israel. And Ahab the son of Omri reigned over Israel in Samaria for 22 years. And Ahab the son of Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. And as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, he took for his wife Jezebel the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. He erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. And Ahab made an Asherah. Ahab did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than all of the kings of Israel who were before him. In his days, Hiel of Bethel built Jericho. He laid its foundation at the cost of Abiram, his firstborn, and set up its gates at the cost of his youngest son, Segub, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Joshua, the son of Nun. And we'll end our reading for this episode at the end of 1 Kings 16, and we'll pick up in the next episode with the beginning of the ministry of Elijah. But here is Ahab who's in place, and you'll have seen this pattern that each king is said to have done greater evil than all the kings before, right up to Ahab. Ahab takes the evil of the northern kingdom to a new level, and he shows that in a number of ways. First, the worship of Baal, erecting an altar for Baal in Samaria and a temple of Baal. He's bringing a state religion, whereas Jeroboam seems to have worshipped God. Or sorry, Jeroboam didn't, but he makes idols, the golden calves, which in some sense are meant to represent the true God who had brought Israel out of Egypt. Ahab, by Ahab's time, it's very clear that there's no attempt to try and pretend that they're worshipping the true God, the God of Israel at all. No, actually, they're worshipping Baal. And this is part of an alliance that he makes with the Sidonians, who were worshippers of Baal. Ethbaal, notice Baal in his name, was the king. And Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, becomes the wife of Ahab. So Jezebel, this woman who becomes significant, of course, is now part of the story of Israel. She is a great threat to the worship of God. And he makes an Asherah as well. So it's not that he only worships Baal, but the Baals and the Asherahs. And he provokes the Lord to anger. But then we also get this reference in verse 34 that says Hiel of Bethel builds the city of Jericho. That's significant because back in Joshua chapter 6 verse 26 we have the destruction of Jericho, of course, under Joshua as the people invade the promised land. And Hiel builds the city of Jericho, which is something that God had said should not be done. Or rather that Joshua laid a curse in the name of the Lord. And of course the Lord was with Joshua. But verse 26 of Joshua 6 says, Joshua laid an oath on them at that time, saying, cursed before the Lord be the man who rises up and rebuilds this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation, and at the cost of his youngest son shall he set up its gates. And it's this curse, a prophetic curse, that is fulfilled here in 1 Kings chapter 16, when Hiel loses his firstborn son Abiram and his youngest son Segub. But what we're seeing here is a reversal of the conquest of the land. Israel was meant to purify the land, to bring the worship of the true God, their Redeemer Yahweh, to that land. But here is Ahab taking them right back to the worship of the same gods that the Canaanites had worshipped, Baal and Asherah, rebuilding the city of the Canaanites. Not Ahab who does it, Hiel of Bethel, but it's under the patronage and rule of Ahab that he's allowed to do this. the scene is set for the coming of Elijah and Elisha, those great prophets. But that's for the next episode. What we're seeing here is this tragedy of a period of history lasting about 160 years from the death of Solomon right up until the time of Ahab. And we've seen that the northern kings changing regularly, all from different families, but all of them wicked in the eyes of God. The southern kings, we have the good King Asa, and we have bad examples too. But the scene is set for a new stage with the coming of Elijah.